Now, on the 23rd of May, I think that's this day, 4 weeks, voters will elect, sorry, it's tomorrow, 4 weeks, they will elect 11 parliamentarians to represent Ireland in Europe, a select group who will spend half their working week on the continent. Decisions taken at a European level have a big impact on several aspects of our lives, but despite this, there's an apparent disconnect persisting between the institutions in Brussels and the citizens they serve. I'm joined now in studio by the former Minister for European Affairs, Lucinda Creighton, TD, and by Dr. John O'Brennan, Director of European Studies at NUI Maynooth. And on the phone from London is Stephen Booth, Research Director of Open Europe. That's a think tank which wants to see reform at EU level. Good morning to you all. Lucinda Creighton, I suppose you served a lot of time in a previous ministerial life going between Dublin and Brussels. Do you think that there's a sufficient appreciation among people here about what exactly you were doing on our behalf?
Sadly, no.
Understanding, you don't expect to get appreciated in politics anyway.
Certainly not. I don't expect to. No, but I think that, you know, we don't scrutinise a whole lot what goes on at EU level, and I certainly think we don't appreciate necessarily how important it is and how much impact it has on our lives. You know, we're aware that up to 80% of legislation that's passed in the Oireachtas ultimately emanates from the European institutions. So it is hugely influential.
Give me that figure again, 80%?
Approximately 80% of legislation that's passed in the Oireachtas begins its life in the European Union, in the European institutions. So it has an impact on every aspect, every element of our life, from, you know, health, education, social policy, environment, and obviously financial and economic. So it is all encompassing in terms of how important it is. But yet, you know, when we look at the European elections taking place on the 23rd of May, I suspect that the vast majority of people really haven't focused on it and probably won't focus on it. And I fear that a huge number of Irish citizens won't vote on the 23rd of May. So that's a cause for concern. The European Parliament is really important. It is a co-legislator. So that means it's as important as the governments that represent us at EU level. It has equal say on almost every policy area in terms of shaping and deciding on legislation that ultimately is implemented in this country. And we need to start taking it far more seriously.
Stephen Booth of Open Europe, would you say the picture as described there by Lucinda is something similar to the views and understanding of people in the UK?
Yes, I mean, in the UK, I mean, turnout historically has been even lower than in Ireland, and this obviously isn't a problem that's specific just to Ireland or the UK. I mean, turnout across the EU at the last European election in 2009 was only 43%, so this is a problem that's pervasive across the European Union, where people feel that, for whatever reason, that voting in the European elections is not something that they're prepared to do.
And John O'Brennan, you, as I say, are Director of European Studies at NUI Maynooth. People, I suppose we've heard it before, that so much of our legislation comes or emanates from Europe. Is there any way we can improve people's knowledge as to just how important these European institutions are increasingly becoming? I mean, we've known it, I suppose, for 40 years since we joined.
Yeah, there's a long-standing problem in Ireland and elsewhere. It's more obvious in Ireland because we hold referendum campaigns regularly. And in all of those campaigns, we can see that there's an enduring problem with information and knowledge. People don't feel that they understand enough about the EU institutions, why they matter to their lives, the lives of their families, their communities, and so on. And that problem is actually getting worse. And the paradox is, as Lucinda said, the Parliament has become a really powerful player. With every successive treaty change we've had, the Parliament has increased its power, yet its legitimacy is in real doubt for the reasons that Stephen has just outlined, a turnout of 43%. With every successive election since 1979, that turnout has fallen, and there's a real fear that this time the turnout will fall again. So there are all kinds of problems, and there's no government within the European Union that I can see that has actually effectively tackled the communication problem within their own jurisdiction.
To come back to you, Stephen, is there fairness, though, in the way, particularly some of the British media, I'm thinking of, say, newspapers like primarily, say, the Telegraph Group and some of the other, some of the Murdoch publications as well. They report not so much on a real institution or real institutions, so much as caricatures of them. And maybe if they were a bit more alert in reporting the reality of what was going on, be it in the European Parliament or at the Commission, they could maybe, they would be able to feign surprise maybe as often as they do about things that are coming out from Brussels.
Well, I think that's the real question. Is it, why are people turned off by the European elections? Is it because I would challenge the view that it's because they don't know enough about the European Union? That may well be the case, but I think that what is really driving this is that successive EU treaties have given the EU institutions and the European Parliament much more power, but people don't feel they're able to influence what the European Parliament does, even by voting. Because no matter how you vote in your European Parliament election, be it in Ireland or be it in the UK, you're a tiny percentage of the votes cast across the European Union. And by way of pooling powers at the European level, that necessarily dilutes the impact an individual country or individual voter can have on the outcome. So I think, to be honest, that's really what is driving this kind of sense of distance from the EU and the institutions and the democratic deficit. So I think, I mean, there is true that there is a certain caricature of the EU institutions, not just in the UK, but in many member states. But it's on this basis that Brussels feels a very remote place, and that whatever you cast your ballot for at home very, very often doesn't get translated into the outcomes that you see at the European level.
I suppose, Lucinda, as well, another point is, and you alluded at the outset to the increasing influence of the Parliament, that's something which you could say has been played down, and the Irish governments successively have not encouraged it, simply because we're one of, well, it started off as one of 9, then it became one of 15, and now it's one of 27, 28. We have one commissioner, we're one state, whereas we're a much smaller fraction in the Parliament. So why would we want to see the Parliament having as much influence as it's having?
Well, it's, I suppose, all the more reason why we should be electing, you know, competent, effective MEPs. And this is a big problem, frankly, because if you're not sending people of stature, people of significant competence to the European Parliament, they won't have influence. If you do, they will.
Do you not think we did that the last time?
In some instances we did, and some we didn't. I can see you lighting up, Sean. I'm not going to name names, but you know, where you, I mean, I'm a member of the National Parliament here, where we have very ineffectual committee system. We have really no accountability to the Parliament. In the European Parliament, I'd say the opposite is the case. It's hugely transparent. If we had to pick a model for the Dáil and Shannon, I would be basing it very closely on the European Parliament.
Really? What would we be doing differently?
Well, for example, in the European Parliament, it is very rare that you would find somebody who would become a chair of a committee or a rapporteur responsible for a big policy agenda item who isn't competent to actually chair that committee or write that report or take charge of that area. In other words, MEPs have expertise. If you don't have expertise, you will not be promoted. You will not get to those positions of influence. In the Irish Parliament, as in many national parliaments, it's much more a case of, you know, patronage, of, you know, who you're friendly with, whether a party leader owes you something, and so on and so forth. A committee chair, for example, is often a consolation prize. The European Parliament is far more of a meritocracy. It's far more based on talent and merit than our own Parliament. So there's a lot we could learn from it. So, you know, I think the quality of MEPs that you send is hugely important. And the fewer MEPs we have and the bigger the union, the more important that becomes.
John O'Brien, what Lucinda Creighton is saying may very well be right, but you know, nobody in the members, except that nobody in the member states knows what's going on in these committees. We just have to take the word of people like Lucinda.
Interestingly, they're all publicly available. I mean, they're all public sittings, public hearings. You know, it is far more transparent than many of the national parliaments in the member states.
But you're both actually pointing to a really big problem, which is the disconnect at the national level.
Yeah.
I've been a long-time observer of European affairs in the Oireachtas, and there is a real and enduring problem there. The Oireachtas has virtually no input into decision-making on EU issues. And that's really important if, as Lucinda says, a great majority of our legislation emanates in some form or other from Brussels.
You mean it just processes stuff that comes from Brussels as opposed to initiates stuff that goes there and comes back?
Yeah, that's right. What the European Affairs Committee does, for example, is a joke. It is supposed to scrutinise legislation that comes from Brussels, and it doesn't do that at all.
But can it change legislation or proposals that come from Brussels, or are they just, as I say, waving them through like traffic cops?
Well, there are important differences amongst the member states on this. There are small states like Denmark, for example. Its national parliament can give its government a mandate. So that its government can't actually act in the council in Brussels without the specific consent of the parliament through that committee. Now, Ireland is at the other end of the scale for different reasons, partly because of our electoral system, our political system and so on. But there is a real case, I think, for involving our national parliamentarians significantly more in the entire kind of architecture of EU decision making, but especially in scrutinising legislation.
Is that something, Stephen Booth, that you think might make people in Britain better disposed towards the European Union?
Yeah, I think so. I think the points you've been touching on are the right ones in the sense of this. There's a much bigger debate going on here, not just about the processes in the European Parliament or the process of scrutiny in domestic parliaments. There's a much bigger debate, not just in the UK, but in Holland and so on, about what it is the European Union should really be doing and what should be left to national parliaments. And I think successive or history has shown that you can't really trust the EU institutions to police that because the institutions have an interest in doing more and more things and more Europe. So I think, as John said, you have to have the national parliaments much more involved as a sort of to protect the rights of national parliaments and member states and actually say, well, this is something that we can decide nationally and this is not something where there's any great value in having the EU involved and therefore let's say to the European Commission or the European Parliament or even the Council that this is something that we can do nationally and we can decide it better nationally because also that's another way of it being closer to the voters.
That goes back to something Jacques Delors, I think, used to emphasise two decades and more ago in his days as president, this whole idea of the Commission of... the principle of subsidiarity, could be done at national level, should be left there. Do you think we've gone away from that, Stephen?
Well, I think that principle hasn't been respected. I think the successive treaties have seen more and more power go to EU just for power's sake, not because it's something the EU can do better than the member states. And that's created a real problem. And I think that has fueled this democratic deficit and this sense that the EU is a remote thing that actually is not in the interests of regular people and voters or even the member states themselves. And I think that's the real problem here. It's not simply one of process in the European Parliament or process in national parliaments. It's a sense that the EU is doing things that it should be doing.
And Lucinda, it looks like we're going to be going the referendum route again in the not too distant future, particularly if we're talking about banking union. Now, that's something on which the Irish people, you could say, got their fingers badly burnt. Was it from the Maastricht Treaty, which set up the single currency? And
I think
all of a sudden, though, well, not so much all of a sudden, but we gave up the right to control both our money supply and our rate of interest, which had catastrophic effects on the Irish economy.
Yes and no. I mean, obviously, there have been huge benefits from the currency as well. And, you know, I think if you look back over the last 10 or 15 years, initially, you know, our membership of the euro currency was hugely beneficial. And I believe it will be again. I mean, I mean, there were many who predicted the demise of the euro and, you know, a kind of an implosion of the currency union back in 2011, 2012. It didn't happen. And I think that the currency will emerge stronger. I mean, I agree with Stephen. I think that there are areas where clearly EU legislation has overstepped the mark. It's easy. And
give us a few examples in your own view.
Well, I mean, there was a famous one last year which caused a huge amount of upset, which was controls over the labelling of olive oil. Okay, now this didn't just happen because some bureaucrat in Brussels decided it was going to. And sometimes, if you listen to, particularly, if I may say, the British Eurosceptic media, you know, everything is sort of, you know, faceless bureaucrats trying to steal.
Well, this
our,
goes
steal
back
our power.
To the days of but Yes Minister and Yes Prime Minister, doesn't it?
Well, indeed, but in fact, I mean, that that regulation was introduced because certain olive oil producers in certain parts of Italy lobbied intensively for it to happen. Now, it made no sense to us in Ireland or the UK or in many other EU member states. But, you know, these things always come about because somebody wants them to. And I think that's where we need to get much more rigorous in saying, well, you know, is there a need for this to happen? Why would we introduce legislation in this area? And, you know, when you look at banking union, that's an area where if we had proper banking union in place, a lot of the catastrophe that met us over the last 3 or 4 years would not have happened, or at least would have been reduced or minimised, because we would have been prepared for it. We would have had in place mechanisms to deal with the collapse of the banking system in Ireland and elsewhere.
And we're slightly pressed for time. Do you think that the negotiation of that treaty will be the defining moment for the Irish government, because it's got to have a referendum to support or to approve any changes, that might be the moment where the present government or its successor, but probably the present government, will have its best opportunity or its most leverage to do something about bank recapitalisation here?
Yes.
Last question to you, John O'Brien. People will be having candidates for the European Parliament elections knocking on their doors over the coming 4 weeks. Any good questions that you think they should be asking them?
Well, there was a famous news talk quiz, I think, dare I mention it.
As long as you don't do it again, you won't be back.
Where candidates were asked very basic questions that are asked of European teenagers, and most of them failed to answer even 50% of the questions. So certainly ask questions of the candidates for the reasons that Lucinda said. The people that we are electing are hugely important. I would say, for example, that the Irish members of the Agriculture Committee in the next Parliament will probably be more important than the Minister for Agriculture domestically. Now, that would constitute an enormous change, because the European Parliament now has jurisdiction over the budget and agriculture is a huge part of that. So you should really pay attention to the policy issues that these people are campaigning on, their record, obviously, in Ireland and in Europe if they've been serving.
OK, these are issues we'll be looking at ourselves in more detail in the coming weeks, because we're taking the programme on the road. We're doing some OBs, and obviously we'll be having studio discussions on them as well between now and this day, 4 weeks, which will be the eve of the elections to the European Parliament. We'll leave it there for the moment. My thanks to Lucinda Creighton, TD and former European Affairs Minister, to Dr. John O'Brien, Director of European Studies at NUI Maynooth, and also Stephen Booth, Research Director with Open Europe.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.